And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you on this Thursday till 3 o'clock as we get ready for the weekend with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, we preview the NBA Finals, which begins tonight. Plus, on a Throwback Thursday, we'll look back at the best finals of all time. Could we have a classic series this year? Ben Golliver will join us later on this afternoon to talk about the NBA Finals. Plus, a stock watch on some of the top programs in college football and a change that Dabo Swinney made that may be a good sign. Who's in better position or has a quicker turnaround, Clemson baseball or South Carolina baseball? A lesson for Javon Kinlaw from one of his teammates. We'll talk about the match. We'll talk about a former athlete who's really annoying me online. We'll talk some soccer with a member of the Charleston Battery an hour from now. And a whole lot more. Whatever else comes up between now and 3 o'clock throughout this afternoon. More tough details emerging in regards to Deshaun Watson. Brian Kelly with some interesting comments. We'll see what else we can squeeze in. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can always leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Thursday, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing good. Got to watch a little bit of the match last night. It was okay. Tom Brady seemed like he really stinks at golf, but, you know, it's all good. Maybe the pressure got to him, but it was a good night of the match. Got to relax a little bit, and now we're into the NBA Finals. Luke, I'm feeling good on this Thursday.
Yeah, good to hear. Let's start with that. The NBA Finals begin tonight. Let's dive into this matchup. The computer models like the Celtics. ESPN's FPI has the Celtics winning at like an 86% chance. The analytics like the Celtics. They've been the favorite going into the playoffs the entire time from the analytical crowd. A lot of basketball people like the Celtics as well. On The Athletic, an anonymous scout said he thinks the Celtics will win in 6 games. As he said, for the Celtics, they've had a very rough road. They've had a competitive road to get here. They've won a couple of game 7s on the opponent's floor. Their bench is better than Golden State. Their size will be an issue for Golden State. Boston has more depth, more size, and they've risen to the moment. That was the take of an anonymous scout. Anonymous coach told The Athletic he too likes the Celtics in 6 games. He said Boston's defense will be good enough to limit the easy buckets that Golden State's offense creates. They can play big with Robert Williams. They can play small with Grant Williams. They switch a lot on defense. They're very physical. He liked the Celtics as well. I think the Warriors win the series, and I think they win in 6 games. And I have a few reasons why I think so. Let's go through them. Number one, most importantly, is experience. The Warriors have a combined 123 games of NBA Finals experience. The Celtics, they have 0. They don't have a single person who's played in an NBA Finals before. This is the third NBA Finals all-time where one team has over 120 games of Finals experience. And the other team has 0. In the two other instances, the team with the experience won. This is the largest separation we've had in terms of finals experience since 1997, when the experienced Bulls, led by Michael Jordan, beat the Utah Jazz in the first of back-to-back finals matchups between those two. But at that point, for the Jazz, a lot of those guys are playing in the finals for the first time. The Bulls, obviously, at that time are in their fifth finals of the 90s, and they won in six games. This is old hat for Golden State. This is all new for Boston. It's the first time they're going through this. For most of Golden State, it's the sixth time. Nothing new, no surprises. They know what it's like dealing with the media. The Jimmy Kimmel Show is out there yesterday interviewing these guys, having a good time. Adam Silver has his press conference tonight. More people are watching. The games are later. Even the minor details. Nothing's going to trip up Golden State. They've been through it. For the Celtics, it's all a new experience. And they're being led by a 24-year-old. 24-year-olds usually don't win NBA championships. It just hasn't happened. LeBron, Jordan, they had to wait till their late 20s. Jason Tatum's trying to get it done before his 25th birthday. Additionally, the experience of the coach is important as well. We talk a lot about the players and the fact that the Celtics haven't played in one of these games. Same idea with the coaches. Steve Kerr is now coaching in his sixth NBA Finals. Ime Udoka has never been a head coach in a Finals game. And the Warriors have been so good in third quarters this year, coming out of the locker room after halftime with adjustments, putting teams away in that third quarter. Meanwhile, while Ime's been fantastic in his first year as head coach of the Celtics, I'm concerned with this matchup against Steve Kerr. Because, reason number two, why I like the Warriors. The ability, or on the other side, inability, to close out games. The Celtics this year were 29th, second from the bottom, in clutchness. When games were on the line, right late in the games, the Celtics blew a lot of those opportunities. The Warriors, meanwhile, are number one in the playoffs in clutch points. When the game's on the line, nobody scores more than Golden State. The Warriors, again, that experience, are good at closing out games. They find ways to win. Celtics, more often, in those close games, find ways to lose. And there may not have been a bigger indictment than Game 6 last series against the Heat at home, a trip to the finals on the line, and the inability for that Celtics team to close out the game. That takes me to reason number three why I like Golden State. The inconsistency of the Celtics. Mostly, or most importantly, the inconsistency of their star. Jason Tatum took one shot in that fourth quarter of Game 6 against the Heat. Can't happen. And it wasn't the first time that's happened this postseason alone, where Tatum just kind of disappeared in the second half. In fact, I think it was Game 1 of the series against the Heat, in which he at least made only one shot in the fourth quarter. Can't have that. Not when a team, right, in a big moment, needs you to be the star and step up. The Warriors have been far more consistent. And a big reason why is because, well, they have different guys that step up. Steph Curry can have an off night. Somebody else will pick up the slack. I don't trust that as much with Boston. And I feel I can depend on a Steph Curry more than Jason Tatum right now in this spot, in the NBA Finals, again, going back to that experience or lack thereof. I'm not so concerned about the Celtics' defense. It was the best defense in the league this year. And they have allowed the lowest shooting percentage from beyond the arc and inside the arc. Every starter for the Celtics received a vote for Defensive Player of the Year. I think their defense will be all right. I'm more concerned about the offense. Can the Celtics score enough points? Can they be consistent enough? Can Jason Tatum be counted on night in and night out in the NBA Finals? Reason number four why I like Golden State, because of home court advantage. Not only do the Warriors have the opportunity to play four of the seven games this series at home, but they've also won 11 straight games at home. They're 9-0 in the playoffs at home. The Celtics, meanwhile, last two rounds of the playoffs, they're only 3-4 at home. They're under 500 at home. Now, the Celtics have been really good on the road, so maybe something has to give here in this series. We have a really good home team against a really good road team, but when you go back to Boston, how big of an advantage will there be? Because so far this postseason, there really hasn't been a huge home court advantage for Boston in Boston. The Warriors have a great home court advantage. One of the theories is that with all their winning of late, you have some younger fans that have jumped in the bandwagon at Golden State. The Celtics, they did all their winning years ago, giving them some older fans. Not as many people have been jumping on the bandwagon in the last 30 years. So in Golden State, it's a lot louder. Younger crowd, maybe a little more sauced up. They're having a good time. At Boston, maybe it's a little bit of an older crowd. Just a theory. Speaking of those rounds of the playoffs, by the way, that takes me to number five. The number five reason why I like the Warriors in the NBA Finals. And that's because they've had the easier path to get here. Now, usually, this is a concern. When a team has an easier or maybe even an easy path, we worry about if that team's been battle-tested or not. Can we trust them in a big spot? They haven't played anybody. But that's not a concern for Golden State because of, again, that aforementioned experience. They've been here before. The moment won't be too big. We won't have to worry, well, Steph Curry, Draymond, they haven't been tested this postseason. Can they step up in these games against a good Boston team? I think they'll be fine. They've been here plenty of times. And they've played well. They're more rested than Boston, and I think that's more important. Boston may be more tested. Golden State's more rested. I'll choose rested. The Warriors series ended earlier than Boston just did. The Warriors don't have to travel to begin this series. They haven't played in a week. Meanwhile, the Celtics went through a stretch. They played 13 games in 23 days. And they had to go to a Game 7 in the last two series. First against Milwaukee without Chris Middleton. And then against a banged-up Miami Heat team. Teams that have had to go to two Game 7s before reaching the NBA Finals. All time are 2-10 in the NBA Finals. Right? It wears you down. It's a sign of maybe the fact that, I mean, the Celtics, it took seven games to beat Milwaukee without their second-best player. It took seven games to beat the Heat when three of their guys at least were banged up, including Jimmy Butler, for three of the games. And now you think you could go on the road and beat the Warriors? And also, the other part of it, of course, is just that wear and tear. They've played more games. They've played more stressful minutes. Golden State's more rested. The Warriors let one series this postseason go more than five games. The Celtics have gone to seven games each of their last two series. The Warriors haven't played in a week. Boston had to play over the weekend. It's already been a long year, and the Celtics have had to work even harder here in the playoffs. I think the Warriors win this thing in six games because of those things I just mentioned. Experience, coaching, they're more clutch, they're more consistent, they're more rested, they're older, they've been here before, they have home court advantage. In fact, they have a lot of advantages over the Celtics in this NBA Finals. And the idea, right, that sometimes you can take it for granted as well because of how dominant and successful the Warriors have been. That you think, if you're the Boston Celtics, we'll be here again. Or this is the start of something special. We thought the same thing about the Cubs years ago when they finally won a World Series. Baseball will be dominated by the Cubs and the Dodgers for the next 10 years. Yeah, the Cubs have been a disaster since. Don't ever take this success for granted. For Boston, this is a big opportunity and a big spot to get that first championship in over a decade. Don't think that they're going to become the new Warriors. They'll be the new San Antonio Spurs. They'll be here every so often just because they've been close in recent years. We would always talk about Dan Marino in comparisons to Patrick Mahomes. Right, Marino got to the Super Bowl in his second year. And the thought was, that's okay. He'll have plenty more opportunities. Well, he never had another opportunity. Don't take it for granted. This is an opportunity for the Celtics to have a historic run here. Beat the Warriors, get an NBA championship, and then maybe try to start something. But it's a tough matchup for Boston, and it won't necessarily be the start of something special either. Here is Celtics head coach Ime Udoka talking to the media, previewing this series and their tough opponent, the Golden State Warriors.
Obviously, the things that stand out have stood out for years. Obviously, high-level shot making from three-point line. They've added pieces. Some young guys that have stepped up over the years, and Poole adds that to that mix. You've added some veterans as well. The core is the core. You know, what they do well is shoot the ball. But I think teams can kind of overdose on that at times, and it's a lot of the little things that get them going. Basket cuts, slips the basket. You're so concerned about their three-point shooting that they get a lot of other things.
Yeah, a lot of things to worry about with Golden State. It'll be a tough test for the Celtics that begins tonight. Now, who from this NBA Finals could have the most to gain? I have five names for you. I think Jason Tatum's number one. Jason Tatum can gain the most from this NBA Finals. I think he's the obvious number one. He has a chance to be an NBA champion before 25 years old. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, a lot of other greats can't say the same. And in the process, Tatum would solidify himself as a superstar, assuming he plays well and wins the championship. It's something I talked about at the start of the postseason and throughout this postseason. This is the opportunity to alter your legacy. And Tatum was one of those guys coming into this postseason who was riding the fence between star and superstardom. Which way was he going to go? And I think he's been a little too inconsistent. I know everybody's already crowning Jason Tatum. but he has shown the abilities to have big nights and big games. And if he could play well in this finals and become a championship and he'd be first-team All-NBA and he'd do it all by 25, he'd be in small and elite company. Tatum has the most to gain. Number two would be Steph Curry, especially if he finally wins MVP. But getting just that fourth title, regardless, is a big one. We've talked about it already on the show. I mean, only 40 players ever in NBA history have reached the four championship mark. And most of those guys are not as good as Steph Curry. Some of them are riding coattails. Some of them were not quite as impactful or talented as Steph Curry. For Curry to reach number four, and then if he does it with an MVP as well, it would be huge. And this would be the biggest one for him yet. To do it at this point in his career, after Kevin Durant has left, after enduring the injuries, doing it not as the number one seed in the West, beating the number one defense in the NBA in the finals, this would be a big championship for Steph Curry, even though he already has a few rings. Number three on the list of guys that have the most to gain is Ime Udoka. To win an NBA Finals in year one as a head coach is pretty impressive. He would become just the sixth coach to do so since 1955. He joined Paul Westhead, Pat Riley, who both did it with Magic Johnson and the Lakers, Steve Kerr, Tyronn Lue, Nick Nurse. Oddly enough, four of those six would be in the last 8 years alone. And also four of the six would be former NBA players themselves. But to get an NBA championship in year one would be impressive, especially when you consider the Celtics were under 500 midway through the season. And if he, in his first year, turns them around to turn them into NBA champions, that'd be quite the first year on the job. Number four in terms of the most to gain, Danny Ainge, former GM of the Celtics. You know, Dan Duquette was another Boston GM who didn't get enough credit for a championship he helped deliver. He was the GM of the Boston Red Sox. They fired him, replaced him with Theo Epstein. 2 years later, the Red Sox win their first World Series in 86 years. But a lot of those guys on that roster were Dan Duquette guys. In fact, last week, the Red Sox acknowledged such and put him in the Hall of Fame, their Hall of Fame. Danny Ainge may not be with the team anymore. He may have kind of been forced out this past year, but his fingerprints are all over this team. He won the Celtics their championship over a decade ago with the Big Three, and now this is also his team, and it's been built completely different, with draft picks that he mostly got from that trade with the Nets, giving them the Big Three he won a championship with. So he would have delivered championships to Boston in two completely different ways. Last time it was just go out and get the big stars and spend a lot of money, and we're just going to compile a super team and win. And it worked. And then when he saw that that had its limits, these guys were a little old. Okay, let's flip them for a bunch of first-round draft picks, which turned into a Marcus Smart and a Jaylen Brown. And, you know, they traded in the draft for Jason Tatum. And now here they are back in the NBA Finals. Danny Ainge has always been a very good executive. And if the Celtics finish it off, this should be another thing added to his resume. And lastly, the fifth person that could gain the most from this NBA Finals, Al Horford. Now, people are talking about Horford would be a Hall of Famer with a championship this year. I certainly hope not. I know the bar is very low in the Basketball Hall of Fame. To me, Al Horford's not a Hall of Famer. But he did win two championships at Florida. This would be his first championship in the NBA, doing so at age 36. The only All-Star, and Al Horford's a former All-Star, the only All-Star to win at both levels in the last 18 years is Anthony Davis, to win a national championship in college and a championship in the NBA. The only All-Star, right? Some other guys, you know, like a Quinn Cook, right? Kind of rode the coattails for a championship. But guys that actually have an impact, the only one to do it last 18 years was Anthony Davis. Al Horford could join that group. All-time, 32 players have won a championship at both levels, which includes Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and could include Al Horford, who's played the most playoff games without ever playing an NBA Finals game in NBA history. He'll finally have his chance starting tonight. The five guys that have the most to gain from this NBA Finals. Al Horford, I put at number five. Coming up, Dabo is making a change to keep up with the times, and I think it's a good sign for Clemson. We'll look at some of the top programs in college football and the direction they're moving in when we come back. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Seem to whisper and hush. You know the summer light seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you? my love. Can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Well, I wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. And I know now the time is
coming up.
Right.
Dabo is making a change to keep up with the times. I think it's a good move for Clemson. It's the More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Open the show today previewing the NBA Finals, the reasons why I think the Warriors will win this thing, and those that have the most to prove, or at least the most to gain, this NBA Finals. We'll talk more about that later on this afternoon with Ben Golliver. Plus, I'll give you my official picks for the first couple games here of this series with Game 1 tonight. Now, I'm not too big into the stock market. I got some money invested. But if I'm going to gamble, I've always felt like if I'm going to gamble, I prefer to just gamble my money on sports. Because I always say my life really revolves around three things. Sports, music, and then we could just say entertainment. Like movies and TV shows. That's pretty much it. I'm a simple guy. But if you look at some of the top college football programs and try to compare them to companies or the stock market, Alabama would be like an Amazon. Versatile. Willing to change and adapt over time. We've seen that from Amazon, which started as an online bookstore out of Jeff Bezos' parents' garage to what it's become. And for Nick Saban, willing to adapt. They were once a top defensive program. Now, apparently, they're a quarterback academy. And the things they've done offensively, still being able to win. They've changed over the years. And they both cornered the market for a while. Alabama's been the best in the sport for about 15 years, right? Amazon has been a giant for quite some time. You could even compare Nick Saban to Jeff Bezos. They're both incredibly powerful people in their own worlds. Saban in the college football world, Bezos in the business world, or just the world of making money. The millionaire, actually billionaire world. But now, right, there's a little concern with Amazon, with inflation and some current uncertainties in the economic world. And Amazon, the stock, down a little bit. Just like many may think, Alabama, there may be some current concerns. Alabama may be down a little bit. And for some of the same reasons, those uncertainties. Saban just lost to two former assistants this past year. That's never happened before. Georgia finally beat Nick Saban. Kirby Smart able to beat him in the biggest game. That's never happened before. Saban's now complaining about name, image, and likeness, taking shots at Jimbo Fisher. People interpret that as some sort of fear. Is Saban worried about keeping his grasp at the top of the sport and others, like Texas A&M, coming for him? Is he slipping? He's now 70 years old. How much longer is he going to be around? Has Saban lost his fastball? These are all questions and concerns. And yet, at the end of the day, as we ponder Amazon's immediate future with some of the things going on economically, and we ponder Alabama's immediate future with some of the things going on in college football, when push comes to shove, are you really going to sell on either? Are you really going to sell on Amazon? Can you really sell on Alabama and Nick Saban? Just like I've always said with Tom Brady, I'll be the last one to go down on that ship as well. I'll turn the lights off when everybody's gone. When everybody leaves the Saban party or the Tom Brady party, I'll be the one there to clean up, turn the lights off. I'll be the last one to leave. I have never doubted Tom Brady. I will not doubt Tom Brady until he officially retires. Same I did with Saban. Unless Alabama starts losing 8 games a year, I am not jumping off the Nick Saban ship. Regardless of NIL and his complaints and losing to Texas A&M and Georgia last year, Alabama will be just fine. Speaking of Georgia, I guess they're like Apple right now, where there's no concern there. They print money, they'll be on top for a long time. Georgia just won a national championship. I mean, hell, they went 40 years without a national championship. It didn't matter. They were always a top-tier team playing in the top conference. We always talked about Georgia as one of the teams to watch, and they're always there. Kind of like the Dallas Cowboys to a certain degree. I always say this about the Cowboys. Regardless of what the Cowboys do, they could win 4 games. Every year we talk about, okay, can the Cowboys win the Super Bowl? They're always in the conversation. Georgia's the same way. Georgia went 4 decades without a championship. It didn't matter. At the start of every football season, we'd wonder, is Georgia going to be there in the end? And now that they've won a national championship and Kirby Smart has gotten over that hump, right, there really is little. That was the last concern, the worry that, yeah, but can they win the big one? Well, they've shown they can. There's little concern left with Georgia. Kind of like, I guess, Apple right now. Ohio State is, I don't know, an S&P 500. Take your choice. They're consistent. They may not be the best stock, but it's one you buy and you just hold because it's always going to be there. Oklahoma and Ohio State have had the fewest losing seasons in college football. Ohio State has had one losing season since 1988, and it was when they had an interim head coach. From Jim Tressel to Urban Meyer to Ryan Day, they've all been successful, and right away. Urban won right away. Ryan Day picked up where he left off. Ohio State is just all reliable. You hold on to them, and you watch it grow. And they're reliable, like a Coca-Cola or something. Now, the Gamecocks, if we thrust them into the conversation, they're not as reliable as Ohio State. They're a little more volatile. And so the Gamecocks are a more volatile stock, like, I don't know, instead of a Gamecock, maybe it's like GameStop. Right? There's some potential there. You can see it with South Carolina. Things could go very well, or it could just completely blow up in your face. It could just be flushing your money down the toilet. The Gamecocks are hopeful with Spencer Rattler and Shane Beamer. But they're still the Gamecocks at the end of the day. So we can't get too excited. I mean, Vegas still has them at only about 6 wins this year. The most talented quarterback they've ever had. Maybe South Carolina's more like Pinterest, which is like a social media app. I've never used Pinterest, but it's popular. However, they're down 37% year-to-date, Pinterest's. But suddenly, this year, monthly users have increased. Average revenue is up. There is some hope on the horizon that maybe they're moving in the right direction. Kind of like South Carolina. The Gamecocks have been down for a few years. But there is hope on the horizon. We bring in Spencer Rattler. You bring in Shane Beamer last year. And you have hope that they're moving in the right direction. Like maybe a Pinterest. Pinterest has had a tough last year. But suddenly, this year, 2022, some of the numbers are going up. Hope that they're moving in a good direction, like the Gamecocks. However, there's always that chance that it just blows up in your face, that they are failing. And then Clemson is like Facebook, or I guess Meta they're now known as. It's like Ron Artest, changing his name to Meta World Peace and whatever he is now. And we've had Ron on the show a couple times. I never know what to call him. Then he took his wife's last name. He's like Meta Sandiford now. I don't know. Same idea with Facebook. They're going to change their name, or they already changed their name to Meta, or they're under a company. I don't know. But they used to be, Facebook used to be the top social media app. They had the most users. Now they're kind of in a decline. They had a decline in users for the first time ever this year. Clemson was at the top of the sport. And now the Tigers have had a little bit of a decline. And just like Facebook, Meta, Ron Artest, there's whatever you want to call them, there's concerns about if they can rebound. Can they right the ship? Can they get back on top? Should you jump from the sinking ship, therefore selling your stock? Or are they going to turn this thing around and get back on top? Right? Facebook switching to Meta, hoping to change the world. But the direction is a little bit of a concern right now. And that may be like Dabo in the direction of Clemson. In a name, image, and likeness world and a transfer portal world where Clemson's coach isn't too fond of those ideas. But that takes me to this. We got news this week of a change from Dabo Swinney, a sign that Clemson's changing their ways to maybe keep up with the changes of college football. Dabo will be hosting June official visitors on campus for the first time, doing so this weekend. They're having 8 kids visit Clemson this weekend. The NCAA changed the rule. They passed something 4 years ago where they said programs, you can now have kids come between April and July of their junior year, and you can pay for their visits. Before, it was all on the kids. Like, hey, if you want to visit, you can. We just, theoretically, right, we can't have anything to do with it, at least not in terms of getting you here. You have to pay your own way. You can come visit. We'll meet with you. We'll show you around, meet the coaches, but it'll be at an infraction. We'll get punished if we're caught, you know, flying you in, having you come visit. 4 years ago, the NCAA changed that, and they said, okay, junior year between April and July, you can go visit. The school can foot the bill. They can have you come visit. It'd be an official visit, yada, yada, yada. And Dabo instituted a rule of no official visits in the summer, as he said, to, quote, protect our program and protect our culture. And so while other schools were taking advantage and having kids come visit earlier or maybe more often, Clemson was choosing not to. Even last year, when COVID shut down visits for 15 months, unless you're Arizona State breaking the rules, but for most people, they couldn't have visitors for over a year. And when things opened back up and teams were all excited to get these kids finally back on campus, still, Dabo didn't budge. Said, no, that's not what we do. They still didn't have visits till the fall. They took even more time off from these official visits. And Dabo has said, quote, "I'm not trying to be like everybody else. I want to be Clemson. Clemson's not for everybody, but I want them to choose us." Right? Because the idea being, if they're really interested, they'll wait till the fall. I don't need to now. We've been doing it this way for years. Now you're telling me I can have them come in June? I don't need to. It's been working for me having them come in the fall. And if they really want to come to Clemson, they'll be willing to wait until the fall. They won't commit just yet. They won't make up their mind. They'll want to see Clemson. And Dabo, if I'm reading his words correctly, right, he wants guys that want to be there. So if a guy is too impatient or he doesn't care so much about Clemson that, I'm not going to wait to go see him in the fall. The idea being, well, then they must not really want to be here. We don't want them anyways. But in the process, you're giving other teams a head start because other teams are going to take advantage. Right, which is what I said about the transfer portal for Clemson. It's what I said even about when we had the debate when Shane Beamer was hired and I was pushing for Hugh Freeze. And Gamecock fans are saying, right, no, we don't want that guy. That's fine. If you want to take the high road, I got no problem with that. But just know that other schools won't be so kind. And so if you're not going to take advantage, others will take advantage and use that advantage to then beat you. So you might as well get your hands a little dirty. Whether it's with the transfer portal, name, image, and likeness, hiring somebody with some red flags because you know someone else is going to eventually. Whatever it may be. Just understand, if you don't take advantage, that's fine. You don't have to, but others will, and they'll use it against you. And so other schools have been having kids come and visit in the summer. Clemson always said, no thanks, not interested. It's like when you were growing up in school, they'd always tell you, right, you want to go first for the presentation because you set the bar. We have higher expectations afterwards. Same idea with these visits. If they visit a bunch of schools in the summer and then go to Clemson in the fall, now you have to live up to the expectations of all those others. And again, Dabo saying, well, if they don't want to be here, right, we don't want them. We want them to truly choose us for us, and that's fair. But in the world of recruiting and bringing in talent to win college football games, and it's a dog-eat-dog world, right, sometimes you have to give in a little bit. Sometimes you have to give the upper hand to make sure you bring in talented players. If you go searching for a car, you're looking to buy a new car, maybe a new house, you don't necessarily buy the first car you see. But a lot of times, if you go to one lot, one dealer, and there's a car you really like, you're going to look around. You'll do your due diligence, but a lot of times it's hard to beat out that first car that you saw that you really like. That first impression is so powerful. So again, if a kid goes and visits a bunch of schools throughout the summer, and then you go to Clemson in the fall, you may really like Clemson. They may do a great job. But maybe your mind is already quasi-made up. That it's hard to get you off that first impression, that first car you saw, the very first house you visited. You looked at a bunch of other houses, went to open houses, but that you keep coming back to that first one. There was something about it. And all these other ones have had to try to meet that expectation, and they haven't. For Clemson to intentionally put yourself at the back of the line could be a bold move. They're visiting all these other schools throughout the summer. They already have that impression in their mind that bar's been set, and you have to match it every fall. And Clemson, look, they've done just fine in recruiting. But a change like this, as minor as it may seem, Dabo is showing that these policies that he has instituted can be updated. That things can change to keep up with the changes in the sport and the times, such as maybe the transfer portal. He's doing something different. I assume because he has to, not necessarily because he wants to, but regardless, I think it's still a good sign. I frequently reference a study that was done years ago where they force people to make a change. You would flip a coin, and depending on if it was heads or tails, you would have to do something in your life. And people were forced to make a change. And this study found when they circled back months later, the people that were forced to make a change were happier than the people that didn't make a change. Sometimes you have to be forced to make a change, and it can be the best thing for you. You may not want to quit your job. It may seem too risky. You may not want to move. It's too bold of a decision. And then when you actually go through and you do it, you realize, actually, it wasn't so bad. It was the best thing for me. Sometimes you have to be forced to change and then realize, wow, that was actually a good thing. Maybe that will happen with Clemson. Maybe they'll start digging more into the transfer portal. But in the meantime, they'll have 8 official visits on campus this weekend for the first time. For the first time ever, they'll have kids visit officially on their bill in the summer, and I think it's a good change for Clemson moving in that direction. When we come back, we know Mark Kingston's coming back. Yesterday we talked about Monty Lee being let go as the head coach of Clemson for their baseball program. So when we come back, Clemson, South Carolina. Who is on the fast track for a quicker turnaround, and how big of a turnaround does it have to be? How much growth do we need to see? I'll let you know next. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Although I'll not free the senor, Mary ever, when you're walking out on the street, and the wind catches your feet, sends you flying, crying. Ooh-wee. A wild night is calling. All right. Ooh-wee.
Coming up. Who's closer to turning this whole thing around, Clemson baseball or South Carolina baseball? It's the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. We've been talking this week, first, the news about the Gamecocks keeping Mark Kingston as their head baseball coach. Then we got the news that Clemson, well, they weren't doing the same. They were moving on from Monty Lee, firing him 2 days ago as their head baseball coach. So as we look at these two programs, both in similar positions, both underachieving, both with similar records, one deciding to make the change, the other not, which program do we believe is in a better position to turn this thing around quicker? Now, if you look at the 16 teams hosting the regionals this year in the college baseball tournament, right? Take the top 16 teams. Because Graham Neff, when he announced the firing of Monty Lee, said, Clemson, we are a top 15 program. So that fits the criteria. And if you're a Gamecock fan, I'm sure you have similar expectations as well. It'd be nice to be in that top 16 field. So if you look at those teams this year, and you total up their records, and you get the percentages, they won 71% of their games. And they averaged 41 wins. So that's what it takes. At least this year, that's what it would take. 41 victories, win, you know, over 70% of your games, you'll be one of those top 16 teams. Which I'm sure that's the idea, that's the destination for Clemson and South Carolina. All right, the Gamecocks, you're talking about a program that just a decade ago was winning back-to-back national championships, so I don't think that's too far-fetched or too much to ask for. So now that we have that data, 41 wins, 71% winning percentage, let's take that, compare it to Clemson and South Carolina in recent years. I went back and I looked at the last 4 years, because what you did in 2016 doesn't matter so much. It's about the here and now. And the reason why Monty Lee lost his job and the reason why Mark Kingston's on the hot seat is because of the last 4 years. Right? Monty's first 3 years went pretty well at Clemson. Last four, not so much. Mark Kingston's best year was his first year. Last four, not so much. So if we look at the last 4 years, and if we use some numbers here, which I know don't always play great, for Monty Lee, or really for Clemson baseball, last 4 years, winning percentage, 58%. You should be around 70%. So a pretty big climb. Now, what does that mean? Well, let's make it simple. You have to average 41 victories, if that's the bar that we set. Clemson, in the last three full seasons, when you remove the pandemic year, Clemson has averaged 32 wins. So, point being, whoever comes in to replace Monty Lee, the objective should be to increase the win total by about 9. They've averaged 32 wins the last three full seasons. Can you get that up towards about 40, 41? Can you increase the win total by about 30%? Now, for South Carolina, they've been even worse over the last three full seasons, again, if we exclude the pandemic year. Last three full years, the Gamecocks have averaged 30 wins, which should be the bare minimum. Only three times the last 50 years have they failed to reach 30 victories. It's happened twice under Mark Kingston. 30 wins should be the minimum. That's what they're averaging. In fact, that's if you round up. It's really about 29.6, but you always round up. Unless you're talking weight, right, and then you round down. But for Mark Kingston, the winning percentage last three full years, 55%. And they average 30 wins. Again, you want to be at 71%, 41 wins. So for Clemson, you could say, well, you got to add about 9 victories a year. For South Carolina, you got to add about 10 or 11. You have to increase the production by almost 35% if you're South Carolina. That's a pretty big gap. Right, you go back to Monty Lee, his first 3 years, he won over 41 games all 3 years, which is the benchmark we have set. If you look at Mark Kingston, he has never reached 40 victories at South Carolina. Not great. But that's what you really want to see if you want to be one of these top 15, top 16 programs, if you want to be hosting the regional, if you want to be a top player in the sport. You got to be winning about 70% of your games, get over 40 victories. Last 4 years, Clemson's averaging only 32 wins, South Carolina 30. So both programs could use quite a few more wins, more so for the Gamecocks than for Clemson. Now, additionally, as you try to look ahead and wonder, right, who could pull off this comeback or this turnaround a little bit easier, the new coach at Clemson or Mark Kingston getting things figured out at South Carolina? I'm sure if you're a Gamecock fan, you have very little trust at this point in Mark Kingston. But I'd also look at the conferences. Now, both teams have put 9 members of their conference into the tournament this year, which is the most. The SEC and the ACC both have 9 teams participating in the NCAA tournament this year, more than any other conference. In fact, no other conference is more than 5. So these have been the 2 best conferences in baseball. Clemson's obviously in the ACC, the Gamecocks in the SEC. I think, though, with that said, even though they both put 9 teams in, I do think the SEC is the tougher conference. They've had the last 2 national champions, and Tennessee is the favorite this year. And just if you go back and you look at the history, I know the ACC has 9 teams this year, and they've had good baseball programs, no doubt. But in recent years, it's really been the SEC. So you give me South Carolina, which has had fewer wins than a Clemson in recent years. They're in the tougher conference, and they decided not to make a change. Clemson is making a change. Now, maybe it's not going to be a change for the better. We'll see. But at least you're trying something different. Maybe it will lead to different results. South Carolina's running it back with the same guy who's already been disappointing. Why would you expect anything different? Right? It's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I guess, therefore, we really shouldn't expect different results next year for the Gamecocks either, coming off their first losing season in over 25 years. So at the end of the day, the answer to the question, who's in a better position to turn this thing around quicker, I would say it's Clemson. I think in part because of the conference, in part because they have been winning more games than the Gamecocks in recent years, and also because at least they're willing to make a change and try to do something different. But both programs have quite a pretty big step to make. You should want to be in that area of, you know, top 16 teams, and in order to do so, you got to get over 40 wins, win about 70% of your games. For Clemson, that'd be an increase of 9 victories a year. For the Gamecocks, an increase of about 11 wins a year when you compare that to their last 4 years. That's a pretty big climb that you have to see. I think Clemson's in a better position. When we come back, hey, a lesson for Javon Kinlaw from one of his own teammates. We'll get to that next as we wrap up Hour 1. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today? It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It is another beautiful day out there on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery at the top of next hour as they're back home. Oh, I saw Fish was in town the last couple of nights. That must have been interesting. I like Fish. I'm probably one of the rare people that actually likes the band Fish and the food Fish and the candy Swedish Fish. But when it comes to the band, I'm probably one of the few that actually likes the band, but I prefer their studio stuff. I'm not a huge jam. I mean, that's a jam band, the Allman Brothers. I've seen them live before. I'm not a huge jam band guy, though. I've always said this on the show, right? I want to go see somebody perform 25 songs instead of 12. When I saw the Allman Brothers, they played 10 songs, and they were great. But, like, 10 songs? Come on. And then Tom Petty came on, and he played 25. It was like, yeah, you know, I prefer that. I'd rather hear more songs than jamming on No Way Out for 20 minutes. It's like, all right, come on to the next one already. Anyways, Fish was here the last 2 nights. Now Dave Matthews will be here the next 2 nights. So, man. We were talking about this after we saw the Lumineers, but they're getting some good shows over there on Daniel Island.
Elton John coming in September. I mean, to kind of cap off the whole summer. Yeah, this is great right now for Charleston. I'm loving it. Hopefully we can get out to Dave Matthews concert this weekend.
Yeah, we're working on that. I tell you, the people that made it out to Fish last 2 days, I don't know if they made it into work. Or if they did, I don't know how they're feeling. That's always an experience. Hey, quickly before we go here at the top of this hour. a lesson that Javon Kinlaw may learn or should learn from a teammate. Here was Trey Lance talking to the media yesterday. I love this. From a young guy, here's what Trey Lance had to say about the media, talking to the media yesterday.
In the most respectful way possible, like, I really, it doesn't change how I feel about you guys as people, but I really don't, like, necessarily, it's not my job to care what you guys say or anyone else on social media. I mean, for me, it's, I care about what the guys in the locker room think and what my coaching staff thinks.
That was Trey Lance. I like that. That's the attitude you should have. Now, easier said than done. But the reason why I bring this up and say it could be a lesson for Kinlaw is because we went through that whole thing a week ago where he went online and in like some sort of interview online, went after a quote-unquote media member. Now, I understand why Kinlaw would want to do such a thing, and I wouldn't defend the guy that he went after because he doesn't seem to be a great person in what he does either. But you just have to try to rise above it. And again, easier said than done. Maybe that's lip service from Trey Lance, but I love that idea at least. The acknowledgement, the self-awareness from such a young guy. Kinlaw's a young guy too, not quite as young as Trey Lance, but I think he could take a page out of his book and be better served. You know, like sometimes we'll get hate mail. I know, hard to believe for the Mara Midday Show. But if the numbers are good and the bosses are happy, like that's all that matters. I'm sorry, a few people from time to time may not like the things I say. But what do I care? And the numbers are good, the bosses are happy. As long as Trey Lance, the team's happy, the stats are okay, that's all that should matter. Hour two next.